Hi, I'm Jacob Merle, former Blues player and current DC United player. I'm a Manchester United fan, but DC is the better United. You are listening to the DU Football Show.
Very well said. The young man made his major professional debut.
Major League Soccer debut.
Yep, awesome. Absolutely. He got 13 minutes, got a shot. Not on goal, but a shot. So all right. Good for him.
Sweet.
Sure, Belly, that's how you do a fucking intro, okay? Let's start the show.
Born in the land of Bowie, Maryland. Bred to be a fan of fucking Everton. Punch you in the eye and drink your rye. Sam Houston. Arsenal fans have another Sam. Great day, the fucking Gooner Graham. Smells of a lord. Looks great in shorts. Sam Graham, hey.
Sam Graham.
Fucking United! Fucking United!
Hello and welcome to the DU Football Show, a completely biased recap of the English Premier League as told by two common American schmucks. I am your host, Sam Houston, and across the way from me, he knows how to do an intro. My co-host, Mr. Samuel Graham. How you doing, Sammy?
Goddamn right I do.
Very good.
Not bad. How are you?
I'm doing great, man. Doing great. It was a long day. Very, very busy Monday. That's not normal in supplier world.
No.
Normally, supplier world is just meetings.
Yeah.
And it's nice and easy, and you're normally busy.
You had a meeting. Yeah. Kind of.
No, I went to a sales pitch. I just didn't know it was guised as a meeting.
Also didn't know it was a sales pitch. Basically just reading the beverage journal. Yeah,
you know, some people got it, some people don't. they didn't. That is for damn sure.
There's a kid at one of my stores that I've got a few in my territory that are trying to go come on our side of thing, and he don't have it.
Like, you got it or you
there's,
don't.
There's one particular one I'm like, yeah, you ain't got it, bro.
You ain't got it.
But I feel bad.
We're recording at the DU Public House just outside our nation's capital. You can check us out wherever you get your podcast. And, of course, streaming live every single Monday night. Should you want to chat with us, there are as many ways that you can. Mr. Graham, tell the good people how they can get in touch.
Sure. It's at DU Football Show on all the social medias and DUFootballShow@gmail.com to get in touch with this podcast via email.
One more time.
You know, the only one I was ever wrong about, because I trained people at Breakthrough, and there's only one that I was ever wrong about, and it actually wasn't with Breakthrough. It was Mel. I didn't think she'd last, but she stuck through 6 years now.
Sam and myself both work in the wine and spirit industry and both have a deep passionate love for all things distilled spirits. So as the red-blooded Americans we are, we vow to have a drink in our hand throughout this show and every single show. We are rapidly approaching the top five. This is one of those brands that I say every single time that it's on the list. Don't fuck with this legacy brand. They make great shit.
Yeah, they make
really do. And sometimes you hear a legacy brand name, you're like, meh, meh. No, they make really good shit, and this is right fucking up there. Go for it, Grammy.
Yep, so this is Dewar's Double Double, 21-year-old Mizanora Oak. Comes in at 92 proof, should run you around 150, although I believe we paid a little bit more for it, because it was allocated. I don't think it's available anymore either.
No, I see it on the shelf, but there ain't many bottles.
It is rated at a 94 by the tasting panel from Whiskey Advocate, and it is a blended scotch. Master blender Stephanie McLeod leans further into the experimentation that saw her use Mizanora Oak Cask for Dewar's Japanese Smooth, this time as the final step of the 21-year-old aging process. McLeod aged the malt and grain for 21 years and then created the blend, returning it to the barrel for further aging before finishing it in Mizanora Oak Casks. The impressive result is a beautiful dram with citrus notes that shine brightly with lime zest and grapefruit peel, while the Mizanora Oak adds hints of sandalwood and a glossy mouthfeel, leaving a luscious finish of zested lemon and white chocolate. And that is probably from Mr. Johnny McCormick, and the most spot-on blurb we've had so far, in my opinion.
Well, even more so than last week. So Mizanora as an oak, for you guys that aren't familiar, it is a Japanese oak. It is typically used for making furniture. and it kind of looks like a bonsai tree. So getting parts of the tree that can actually be made into staves
is difficult. Yeah.
And then to boot, it is very porous. So when you put it into this barrel, typically have to put moss around it to kind of keep it packed in so that it doesn't leak, and you still lose a shit ton to angel share because, again, it's a very, very porous wood. But that, you know, sandalwood and almost creme brulee kind of creaminess is something that is unmatched. And if you start to develop your palate, you will recognize a Mizunora oak finish every fucking time because it stands out big time.
That's the fuck. It's delicious.
It's fabulous. Wait till you get a little bit of that ice lets it water a little bit. It is wow. It just there was a 21-year-old that was on the very first list we did from about 4 years ago. That was number two, and all of us universally agreed it should have been number one.
Yep.
Mm.
It's so very good.
It's a big one too. I mean, there's a lot.
All the citrus, yes, very much so. In aroma and in finish and in mouth, it is massive.
And like you said, that creme brulee, you almost get a toasted mallow kind of.
Yep. Yep. That really smooths out the palate. It is.
I like it a lot.
Bloody fucking delightful. And last year's list had in the top five, I think it was number four, in fact, was Dewar's 12-year-old. And I will stand on this hill to this day and continue to say it. It is the best blend for its price point.
Right.
It is like a $35 to $40 bottle. And for a blend, I will drink that every fucking day.
Yeah.
It's remarkably good. And everybody always just thinks, oh, Dewar's White Label, which, I mean, I get it. Like, cheap blends are cheap blends. But Dewar's knows what they're fucking doing, man.
Sure, Billy says, it sounds like an amazing bottle. Probably tastes the same as Old Crow.
Yeah. No. Seriously.
I was like, Oh, and Benson's watching.
Oh, fabulous.
I want you to know that it's when he goes out to see T-Swizzle. He was like, I'll go see the boys, and got confused.
Aww.
So that was part of his T-Swizzle in Paris trip.
So okay. has anybody, do y'all watch Curb Your Enthusiasm?
Yes.
Mel does, I don't.
Okay, so this is from season 11, so we're a season behind. So it's not a spoiler.
I'm not quite to season 11. But
oh, really? Okay. Yeah. No, it's fine.
I've probably seen the bit because I watched a lot of it on, you know, the tubies.
I gotcha. All right. So Leon is was with this woman named Mary Ferguson and booked this whole trip to Asia for 2 weeks for him and Mary Ferguson and the tickets in her name and everything else. So him and Larry are now on a mission to find another Mary Ferguson for him to go with. And yeah. this sounds a lot like
fabulous.
Something that Benson would get up to.
Yeah. Fabulous. That is absolutely fucking brilliant.
But what he put up in the DU Closed group, which you should join, by the way, Drunkard United FC on Facebook. Very funny stuff goes in there.
Fire this weekend. Absolutely. Fucking big fire. Time.
Fucking big time.
Oh.
So, but yeah, just with what he put up today about that ticket to Everton, is just very funny. it smacks. It just reminded me immediately of Leon.
Yeah, like, gotta figure out a way. Gonna get it. Well, it's hopefully, John, you then promptly turn right back around to see if Everton, I know they've got Sheffield at home right before the season's over, but the last two are on the road. There's a chance Merseyside Derby might be rescheduled for when you're over there, buddy. So there could be that chance too.
John Benson's that lucky. It's definitely going to be rescheduled for when he's over there.
Yeah, it'll definitely be. That's how it works for the international
Smokey
man.
Checking in, asking, did I miss the good stuff? And by the way, those of you listening to this, we do broadcast every Monday live, and you can still see the feed on our YouTube page. Right now, I can see the numbers. We're on live across several platforms.
Mm-hmm.
We are on Twitter, Twitch, did I say that right?
Twitch, yep.
Facebook Live, and in our Facebook group. We got some over 20 people watching.
Oh, nice. Very
that
good.
Does not sound like big numbers, But for us,
well, at 10 o'clock at night, it does.
You know what? That's huge.
I mean,
so thank you, everybody out there watching tonight. And I just thought I'd acknowledge that.
Smokey and John, it's like 3:45.
Well, it's
in the
like
afternoon.
Lunchtime. Yeah. John's just tucking into some salmon to call it.
So I thought that was a pretty cool thing to share.
Not bad.
One last thing about whiskey that we. that we should probably talk about real quick is the difference between a blend and a single malt, right? So single malt is all 100% barley bottle distilled at one location. That's mm-hmm. what it has to be. Now, what they started doing with, and originally that's how all the whiskey used to be made with, you know, in that in mind for like Ireland and Scotland. And then with the invention of the coffee still, Aeneas Coffee, who was a tax man from Ireland.
Fucking grass.
And the Irish wanted no part of his invention. The Scottish did. And what they did is they made a smoother whiskey, a neutral base whiskey, typically used to be out of wheat. A lot of times now it's made out of corn. And you do 51% of it is single malt and 49% of it is a blended neutral whiskey to make a whiskey that's a little more consistent, you know, that doesn't have ebbs and flows to it, especially from way back in the day when whiskey was first being made, there could be some drastic differences.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's also why Scottish whiskey, particularly blends, is the most popular whiskey in the world.
Absolutely.
It's what the world drinks. Like,
yeah.
We think how big and bad like bourbon is as far as this market goes. It ain't shit in comparison to blended whiskey.
Well, Johnny Black is one of the biggest brands in the world.
Yeah, yeah. Precisely. Dewar's
is one of the biggest brands in the world. Grant's one of the biggest brands mm-hmm. in the world.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And when we are drinking our blended or single malt whiskey, Mr. Graham, which we always do.
We should always remember to drink responsibly. But I do want to, after the intro this evening, which is why I think Smokey came on, bong hits are like the bat signal for him. no matter what you're partaking in, you should always do it responsibly. I'd like to make sure we mention all of our friends there that partake in that, you know. And if you're doing meth, just do a little meth. You don't have to do all the meth. Come on.
Just a little meth.
Oh, Coke.
All right. Cheers,
just
kids.
Just smell it.
Cheers, guys.
Just don't, kidding.
We do not condone
cheers,
drug
smell.
Use.
I
Saturday, 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 Saturday.
Satire.
YouTube satire, don't ban us again.
And you got your other whiskey there, hon. So you've got it on the rocks as well.
I've been drinking it. Thank you.
Yeah, just okay.
Thanks.
All right.
Thanks, Sam.
We open at the top of the table as Arsenal set the pace for the weekend's monster matchup. Arsenal 2, Brentford 1, Manchester City 1, Liverpool 1. Gunners finally slowed down for once.
It wasn't a great performance.
No, not at all. Not at all.
Brentford definitely made it difficult. We did control the majority of the game. They didn't have many chances. But the chances they had were decent.
And Brentford has been doing that a lot lately. Mm-hmm. They did it twice against City. Yep. And they know how to fucking jam up the works.
Yeah, but eventually it seemed, you know, I mean, when the other team has that much more possession and they tire, mm-hmm. basically, is what happened. And we were able to you know, find the key to unlock it again through Kai Havertz, which he's become a man really over the last, you know, 3 to 5 weeks.
Oh, yeah.
He's been excellent. And he got us over the line here. Obviously, Declan Rice with the first one. But I much prefer the character arc of Aaron Ramsdale in this game is my highlight of it, really. You know, of course, from the Brentford away support, you got the "you're just a shit" David Raya over and over again, just fucking with his head because of the goalkeeping situation at Arsenal is a bit nuts.
That's what you, as away supporters, what you should do.
Oh, of course, yeah. But
fuck with
the
keeper.
The whole thing could have been handled a little bit better, kind of how Klopp handles Kelleher.
Mm-hmm.
He's the greatest number two in the world. He's just singing his praises constantly. Other than, well, I want competition between my, and then never play him.
Right.
It's like,
right.
Just say you now have the best number two in the world and you think Kelleher's a piece of shit.
Yeah.
Arteta. Like, you know what I mean? Just like back your guy.
Right. So when he gets in, there's no nerves. He knows. It's just go time.
Exactly. And so, of course, David Raya couldn't play because he can't play against his parent club. He's mm-hmm. on loan with an option to buy it this summer.
Which I assume it'll be a buy.
Well, yeah, probably. But it was an FFP workaround, of course.
Right.
But yeah, so obviously right at the end of the first half, We have that moment of madness because he hasn't played a lot of football and he's a bit rusty.
Mm-hmm.
And held onto the ball a little bit too long. Good pressing from Johan Wiese. And obviously Aaron Ramsdale kicks the ball directly against him. It loops back up over his head and into the net for a 1-0 scoreline. But Declan Rice was phenomenal, again, breaking up play in midfield.
Mm-hmm.
We really did hold Brentford to a minimal amount of chances. But very kind of midway, I guess, you'd say late, early, or early midway into the second half, probably about 15 minutes in, you had that chance from Ivan Toney just snatched at. He saw Ramsdale off his line. He was kind of out of position, but who would expect Ivan Toney to shoot the ball from there, right, with his weaker foot on a half volley?
Right.
Like that. I think I don't blame Aaron Ramsdale for where he was standing, to be quite frank.
No.
You know?
No, you need to be off the line a little. You need to be able to help if there's a ball passed back. You need to be able to get to it quickly.
But it was a sweet, sweet hit. And Ramsdale got his feet right, moved well, tracked the ball, despite Toney having sliced across it, and got an excellent hand to it.
Yeah.
And then there was a header later on from somebody not very far away from him, a snap header, and he got up for it well. That was a save that he should have made, but it was still a very good save, especially with what happened at the end of the first half. It can knock the confidence a bit.
Right.
These two, he stood up and redeemed himself in this game. Because it very well may be his final appearance in an Arsenal shirt.
Yeah, there's a good chance
and
that could be it.
I'm glad he had that character arc today for him. By the end of the game, everybody was singing his name in the stadium, and also David Raya with big congratulations for him. It shows that the team's just together. Everybody went straight up to him like, well fucking done, man.
A big thing I noticed in this match that's worth mentioning is you could tell there was tension. You could tell that the team was having a hard time getting through, but they found the way to get through, which is something last year wasn't always happening. Or they'd find themselves behind in a game like that, not even in a game like that, and they figure out a way to get the win.
Right. Yeah, that's a big thing this season, right? We had those two games against West Ham and Fulham specifically over the festive period. We revenged those losses, right? That was something last year we went into and dropped points again, or like it was even shakier, right? Brentford has been a bit of a thorn in our spine for a couple of years now. I think it was last season, wasn't it, with the Ivan Toney handball that should have been called that wasn't, and they snatched a draw that started our streak of losing the title last season. So there felt like a bit of like unfinished business, but like again, we're top of the table if we win this game, and here's Brentford in our fucking way again. It just looked like the boys had some nerves about that situation. And apparently the Ivan Toney deal's off the fucking table because everyone in the team fucking hates him.
Yeah, supposedly, no shit.
Because he's a bit of a shithouse.
Yeah, there was definitely some pushing and shoving and a little jawing going on in that match for damn sure. Of course, Kai Havertz gets the game winner, and then you guys see it out. You know, you see it out, and at the end of the day, no matter what happens in the next match, and we'll get to it, you're now top of the table.
Exactly. That's all that matters.
Does this feel different than last year at the top of the table?
This seems, it's, what I like about it is it's tighter, because last year I think we had a 5-point lead when we started fucking up and allowed them to catch us. There is no taking a day off here. You have to be on it. But it is now completely in our hands.
Yeah.
Liverpool does not play us again. And as we'll come on to with their draw, we remain top of the table on goal difference.
Yep.
City and Liverpool's fixtures for the year are now done in the league.
Right.
So really, it's Tottenham and Manchester United that we still have to play. And both of them still have to play Tottenham for sure. I think Liverpool still has to play United.
Liverpool still has United as well.
Which, those are derby games. Mm-hmm. So you can... And United aren't back, don't get me wrong, but they do look better than they did.
Liverpool goes to Villa, and City host Villa.
These are still huge games.
You host Villa still, I believe, as well.
Yeah, but, I mean, John McGinn remembered he was Scottish, so we'll come on to in a bit.
helps a little bit.
Helps a lot. So, I mean, you know, standing next to a Brazilian for the last few years and having a fat ass of your own, it's fair on him that he forgot he was Scottish, but he remembered today.
absolutely a tale of two halves between City and Liverpool. City come out the aggressors and really dominate in the first half.
Well, Luis Diaz, Liverpool, I thought, could have been 3-1 up at halftime if Luis Diaz could figure out how to shoot the fucking ball.
That's true.
Darwin Nunez, same thing. And he did. It's the only time I've ever seen him stop moving. That when that header came into him, or that ball came into him, and he kind of stopped. It was in a weird angle, kind of behind him, and he tried to head it and then fell on his back. Fucking hysterical looking. But he's still weird as shit, man, Nunez. I don't understand what goes through his mind.
Right.
Fucking now, Captain Chaos.
The goal for City, is it great by City on the training ground to develop that play, or is it, why the hell did you fall asleep at the wheel, Liverpool?
For what?
For the corner, for John Stones' goal.
I think the defender, whoever was defending John Stones, I think it was just on his heels. But initially the play, I can't remember who it was that pushed him out. Was it Akanji or somebody? Or Nathan Ake? That pushed out whoever was on the front post. It kind of got him way to open that space up. I did, because of his first name, I wrote a queef joke, but I'm out of respect for Stephen Walsh, I'm not going to do it because it is St. Paddy's week. And
fair enough.
Queefing's good. Quaven. He actually made a few giant saves in this game as well.
Oh, yeah.
And this one he almost got to. I mean, it did hit off his midsection.
Yeah.
He almost got there. But I think it's just a good training ground return. I don't think there's much you can do about it, to be honest. Yeah. The defender, whoever was defending John Stones, but I don't remember who it was just on his heels, and he got a step on him, and that created the space.
What also seemed interesting was the City had plenty of chances in the first half and just couldn't seem to get a second. You know, and while you said, you know, Liverpool did have chances to put the ball in the net, but outside of those few chances, they really didn't look very convincing. Now, second half, oh boy, did they.
Big time.
The locker room talk fucking worked.
Now, I think Liverpool looked better in the second half than when City had their dominating period in the first half. I'd say if you had to pick a winner, I would say overall performance, total, I think Liverpool were the better team.
I would tend to agree with that. And also, but luckily, that's also to be expected. It's at Anfield. You expect them to be the better side. They should be.
Right. But luckily for Arsenal and for Liverpool, City just have a shit Aaron Ramsdale in goal. Because I can't believe this dude did it again. Ball knew he couldn't get to. Runs out. Leaves a leg, defends the penalty. It goes in, but he stays in for that, then goes down and says he's hurt.
Yeah.
So not only did you give the penalty away, you couldn't save the penalty.
And you and hurt yourself you in the process. Injured.
Yeah, and
hurt
you hurt yourself
in the process. Yeah.
So it just, what are you doing? Anderson?
Although I would say the backup gave a good account of himself, made a couple of really good saves.
The one that was very strange, though, that made me laugh, was Kelleher's save into the throat of Phil Foden.
Yeah.
And that ball cannoning off the crossbar.
And then hitting the crossbar.
It was like, oh, great save. Fuck up. What? Like, no idea what's going on. My heart was somewhere between my throat and asshole for about 2 seconds. It was weird, man. It was really weird.
And then as the game kind of came down to the stretch, few questionable, like maybe they could have been penalties for me. I don't think any of them were. I think Mo Salah was an easy fall over there at the end.
I don't think that either of them were penalties. Yeah. But again, this is one of those situations that we talk about all the time. It's an old cliche. Don't give the referee a decision to make.
Well, I also think these refs weren't going to decide this game on a penalty.
Because
there was an argument to be made for McAllister because the leg was high. But also, if you watch it in real time, you don't need it slowed down to see McAllister go, oh, wait, he hasn't kicked it yet. Oh, wait, he's swinging his leg. Jump at him! Yeah. Like, it was McAllister had no intent for trying to win the ball in that situation. He was looking to get kicked.
But Doku did win the ball.
Yeah.
And Doku's foot was not near his head.
Yeah.
Which is the key.
Yeah.
We remember Mane. A few years ago, clean in for Liverpool against Ederson, and got the ball, but his stud still caught Ederson's face, red card. Remember this?
Yes, yes, I do remember
this. So the key was that Doku's foot was not near. He didn't endanger the player.
Right.
And him winning the ball, for me, made it not a penalty.
Yeah, I for me as well, I think we would be kind of both sitting here going, really, that's how you decided to determine yeah. that game? You well, might have just decided the champions. But also, you got to think
about it, too. Referees are human. They yeah. don't want to make that fucking decision. The announcers no. talked about it immediately.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, he could change the game here, the referee.
Yeah. yeah. It was like, and well, then, here's and the then they also said the same thing, too, in the regards of what you just said. They were like, there's not enough in it, and no ref is going to make that decision.
And there was contact on Salah as well. Mm-hmm. Again, he went down too easily.
Yeah.
But in terms of, I think it was Nathan Ake that did the tackling.
Right.
There. If don't give the referee a decision to make. Mohamed Salah was turning away from goal.
Yeah, and that's also not
it was the
too,
only way he could have gotten to that ball anyway. So don't put yourself in a position where the referee could have done it.
And this is also not me just putting on the blue glasses because I'm an Evertonian. I would also say if this was at the other end of the pitch, City would have been trying to pull the exact same shit.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
City would have been falling over like that. City would have tried to jump 100%. Into a kick. Like, they would have looked for the same foul, because in a cagey game like that, you're hoping maybe something can change it.
Oh, yeah.
And all you need is that penalty mm-hmm. to do it.
Now, the other thing too, I've seen a lot of people kind of talking shit about how Virgil van Dijk defended Erling Haaland in that one-on-one, and the general consensus with that van Dijk, Haaland's so great because van Dijk, you know, couldn't even stop him getting a chance off or getting a shot away or whatever
mm-hmm.
when they were 1v1.
Mm-hmm.
And that's mostly from people that have never played the fucking game before.
Right.
Virgil van Dijk played that fucking perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
He retreated enough and forced Haaland into a position where the shot was as easy for Kelleher to face as possible. And he didn't put himself in a position where he got a red because he knew he was the last fucking defender.
Yeah.
That's all he got out of the way so Kelleher could see it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the easiest save he made the entire fucking day.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
for everybody that says, oh, fuck, that's on Haaland's fucking nuts because, oh, Virgil van Dijk couldn't even stop him. He still got the shot off. Bro, that's exactly how Virgil van Dijk wanted to play that. And mm-hmm. Haaland played straight into his hands. Van Dijk had him in his pocket on
yeah.
that play.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It just because they get off the shot does not mean that isn't how you defended them. Like you right. said, the key thing is you make it so your keeper can see it.
Mm-hmm.
You make it so you make the striker make that decision way
split
too
second,
fucking early.
But you also take yourself far enough away from it
mm-hmm.
that you don't deflect it.
Yep. Yep.
If you can't properly yep. defend it.
And
you know what I mean?
And like, even unless he hits it perfect and puts it in mm-hmm. the upper 90s, keeper's probably saving that.
Yep.
Keeper is almost always saving.
And he fucking did.
Yep. Yep.
James Trafford could have saved that.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, easy.
So, all of this, where do we sit now, Graham? Talking about all three of those teams. Where do we feel that?
It's in Arsenal's hands.
Right.
And the hardest game they have left is City. They still have to go to Tottenham, and they have to go to United.
Mm-hmm.
Those are going to be difficult games because they're derbies, essentially.
Well, and both of those.
One of them is a derby. The other one is essentially a derby.
And both of those clubs would love the opportunity
to spoil the party for
your
us.
Title.
Yeah.
yeah.
But the good part is both of them are still fighting for European places.
Mm-hmm.
So they need the points. They can't just throw it against City if they wanted to, you know.
Right,
they
right.
can't just throw it against Liverpool.
Mm-hmm.
They have to play those games, too, because Spurs beating Villa actually helps the title race.
Yeah.
Because now they're only within 2 points of Villa,
mm-hmm.
right? It's 55 to 53, I think, in mm-hmm. that in that part of the table.
It means they're going
to
play all three of those games
as hard as they possibly
tough.
Fucking can, because they need the points to try mm-hmm. to make Champions League.
And we'll talk a little bit about them in the next segment, too, because they're also starting to get healthy at the right time as well. That's
not,
for damn
not
sure.
Not that they would throw the game. I'm not insinuating mm-hmm. that. But if there were a bunch of cunts that would do it, it would be them. is all I'm saying.
So,
but it's intense, man. It's going to be a fun title race. I mean, it like I said, it's in our hands, but City is going to have something to say about it.
What do we think is the thing that cracks? Is it Arsenal handling the stress? Is it City's inability to get really see a game out? And or is it just the fact that Liverpool just has way too many injuries to be able to sustain FA Cup, Europe, and...
Well, they saw a lot of people come back.
Yeah.
In this one. Salah is back, obviously. I think he'll probably be fit enough to start the next game. Szoboszlai came back. He was on the bench last time and came back like properly this game. They had their whole first choice midfield finally for the first time in a month and a half or whatever. So I'm less concerned. I'm worried that they're getting healthy at the right time for me.
Okay.
In my look. There are a lot of tough games left, honestly, for us. And all of them are away from home as well. So that's worrisome. To be honest with you, I'm not saying we're winning the title yet. I stopped short. I said it's in our hands, but I stopped short of saying we're going to do it.
All right.
Because we have some tall orders coming up. And, you know, and this Brentford game didn't really fill me with a ton of confidence.
Yeah. Well, especially considering how great you've looked over the last
six games were amazing.
Yeah.
This one, not so much. So
come out and do that again.
And haven't looked very good.
No, that was one you probably... Other than Fecklin's done a good job of standing on his head at times, but they still have not looked particularly great. Now,
but if we walked out of there 2-0 with 68% possession, I'd have been like, easy days.
Yeah. Walk in the park.
It's coming. Yeah.
Yeah, Fecklin just makes saves.
Right. I'm not saying we need to score six every time.
Right.
But, you know, Brentford is better than some of the opposition we've been putting loads past.
Yeah, true.
But, you know, I expected a bit of an easier time than this.
Right.
And that, you know, the competition is only going to get harder from here with some of those games we have coming up. And we're in first place on goal difference. I mean, Liverpool could go on a run if they're healthy and score a shit ton of goals, and we're in second place and didn't do anything about it.
Right. Very good.
So,
gun to your head, not who do you want, because we know who you want. Who do you think wins the title?
Gun to my head, if I had to say it, it would probably be Manchester City because they have the experience. They've done it. They've gotten over the line, and they still have to play us.
The battle for the final Champions League spot is heating up, with two sides going head-to-head, and the other is close on points, but really still far away in reality.
Yeah.
Tottenham 4, Aston Villa 0, Manchester United 2, Everton 0.
Because make no mistake, Sam, United are still not back.
Yeah, they are not back. The fuck they are back. Really dull first half, to be honest, with two teams that have pretty electric offenses. I was surprised at how dull the first half was.
My first two sentences are fucking John McGinn, and the second sentence is after the first half fucking snooze fest. Pitiful.
I mean, yeah, no, it was.
I want to claw my eyes out at first half.
I, the commentators at halftime are like, well, we were definitely expecting goals or something in the first half.
Bit of foreshadowing there.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what. Spurs looked fantastic.
Villa
looked frantic.
We could not figure out a way around their defense.
Dandervin.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Was bad.
Now him going out is worrisome.
Troublesome for them and helpful for us, actually.
Mm-hmm. Very much so.
Hopefully he's out for about 7 weeks. I think that's when we play them.
I love that every time
be helpful.
Matty Cash got the ball, the Spurs fans in attendance were all booing and yelling because, you know, hard man Cash. Little did they know, it wasn't the Polish guy they had to look out for.
Yeah. That's right.
Now.
Fuck. It wasn't a red.
Get into the second half.
What?
Two.
They should have called the Metropolitan Police. Scotland Yard down here.
That was a motherfucking
crime scene.
That was an absolute assault.
I liked one person described it as a red mist.
Now,
I like how Udogi, once the adrenaline stopped and realized.
He just went through my leg. He stood up, started to walk after him, and then went, whoa, right down.
I also think it was if I go down here and am injured, he'll probably get a red.
Yeah, there's two ways to read that. Either one, I'm fine. Oh, no, I'm not. I'm fine. Oh, he's in trouble. Ow.
I mean, he did only take a step and a half, but it's a definite red. Even if John McGinn got a yellow for it, VAR would have upgraded it.
Now,
that was terrible.
What we need to mention before that red, though, was... two really uncharacteristic mistakes from Villa led to two fairly quick goals from Spurs.
3 minutes apart.
Yeah. And, you know, I will say this, you know, I did, you know, you hate to see, you know, McGinn get the red and be told to leave. but you do love to see them go.
Yeah.
That ass.
You had to shoe him that comment in.
Yeah, because...
Ref told him to back that ass off the pitch.
Because the man's got a phenomenal butt. It's worth mentioning. And then after that, I mean, honestly, you the wheels... It. Wheels
I
just...
I did. I was there. I saw it. I patted it. I mean, I didn't.
The or wheels just fell, the wheels just fell off after that for Villa.
Yeah, I mean, it was always going to. It's not like Tottenham were playing poorly in the game. Mm-hmm. And then going down to 10 men, it's, you know, what are you going to do at that point?
Now, the part that's worth mentioning for Tottenham that's very big for them, and I think this is what really helps them as a whole, that midfield is 100% back now. You have Bissouma, mm-hmm. you have Sarr, and you have Madison. And that changes fucking everything for them.
Oh, yeah. Well, Madison, just look at the desire to get on the end of the ball for the first goal. Mm-hmm. I mean, he realized the center forward wasn't there. And if you watch back enough in the highlights, you could see him after he plays that ball out wide running in the center, right around the center circle.
Mm-hmm.
Just a fucking beeline. Just busted a gut to get to the box.
Mm-hmm.
And then he ends up being on the end of it. Yeah. Unorthodox way he went for it, but I don't know that he would have reached it with his head. And also, actually kind of smart, because if he misses, if he ends up connecting with Martinez in that position, Martinez is definitely coming off the worse for wear. Mm-hmm. If he goes with it with his head, they could both be fucked, or just him fucked.
Right, precisely. Mel, any thoughts there before you do your Malort?
Yep. I'm just going to quote our gaffer. Unai Emery.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to do the voice.
I know
you're expecting the voice. I'm not going to do the voice. We are set. Now I can't help but do it.
I'm not going to do the voice. Good evening.
Got him, coach. Damn it.
Damn it. I did not want to do the voice. We are sad. We are disappointed. But we are fourth. Up the Villa.
Ooh. They're laying on a gauntlet. The vampire laying a gauntlet down.
I did not know that it was possible for a team to beat themselves so badly that the other team won, but Everton figured out a way to do that.
Fucking hell. I think you felt each of Garnacho's cheekbones.
Oh, my goodness.
He's got a chiseled face.
Oh, yeah, he does. Very much so. Oh, it looks a little scary even.
Oh, yeah, a little
especially
bit.
Especially with the hair and
the
everything.
Hair, yeah. I mean, I don't think I've ever also seen a whiter Argentinian.
Now, it was...
super pale.
Because, honestly, Everton came out swinging. They were pushing back United.
Oh, yeah.
And especially on that first one, it was literally the first mistake Everton made in the match. But also, I mean, James Tarkowski is a seasoned veteran. If somebody starts to go by you and drags that last leg... they want you to take a nibble.
Uh-huh.
A guy like him should know, don't take a nibble.
But much like John McGinn, he couldn't resist.
And he fucking stuck it right out there. I mean, it was... So I will say
he
the following...
He just tried to do it a touch more subtly.
There is no debate both of those are clear away penalties. They're absolutely
yes,
penalties.
Agree. Totally agree.
But they're also the most fucking schoolboy
They're the most avoidable
they
of
are,
penalties.
Both
yeah.
of them were just... 100%. He's trailing his back leg. And mm-hmm. credit to Garnacho, this is something he offers. He is very quick on the ball.
Yep.
He can make you swing and miss and get him.
Yep.
And he's looking for you to do that. Now, he also has the ability to, if he gets by you, score. So it's not like you can just be like... oh, give him a little bit of room because he'll make you fucking pay if you do.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to be on him, but you got to keep your fucking feet in. And in both the cases for Tarkowski and Godfrey, just don't fucking take a nibble, man.
Right.
Don't swing the leg.
Yeah,
don't.
100%. Like, I mean, this game had nil-nil written all over it.
Oh, absolutely.
Until they did that.
Absolutely. And it's silly is Everton had... like 30 crosses and like 27 shots. I think 8 of them on target.
Yeah, you outshot them.
Like, and also for United, honestly, United needed this win. It wasn't a very convincing win, but they needed this win. So I guarantee you at halftime, Ten Hag was like, fucking packing it in. We're not giving up a goal. That's it. We're not, this team does not score goals. We're not going to let them, right? Yep. And you could play them differently than say, when you were even with level with Fulham or other teams where you've had like this one, you just say, sit back. If they can mm-hmm. score from 25 yards out, fucking good on them. But we know they can't. And the truth is Everton can't.
Well, Decore can.
Yeah.
It's whether or not they can work themselves a position to do so, because everything in the final third is fucking trash for y'all.
Oh my God.
Jesus Christ.
It has been absolutely terrible. Now, I do want to say, and this is one thing before I do my shot and we finish the segment, is for Everton, there are 10 matches left. 7 of them are against the bottom half of the table. 4 of them are at home. 4 of them are against the teams that are directly below them,
competing with them for survival.
So if they go down, it is only their fault.
Yep.
It is that simple, because you've gotten through most of the battles, right? Yep. You're going to play at Newcastle, which you know you're probably going to lose, even despite their injuries, because Everton does not play well at St. James's Park.
Going down today as well.
Precisely. And you play the last game of the year at Arsenal. You know those are not going to go well, right? But then,
especially when we're lifting that trophy, motherfucker.
Liverpool in the derby. Liverpool in the derby. You know,
it's a derby.
It's a derby. It's at home. And they're going to also be dealing with the stress of, they're trying to win a title. Yep. They're trying to win Europe.
They could
lose the
league
FA Cup.
Park again.
Yeah, that's all possible.
You get a cheeky 1-1. Yeah. I'd like that.
But for Everton, it really comes up here in about the next, because they have 3 weeks off before they play Bournemouth. And at Bournemouth, I'll be very honest, at Bournemouth, I suspect we will lose. We do not play well at the Vitality at all. Since Bournemouth has been up, we never play well at the Vitality.
Apparently neither do Bournemouth.
Yeah, no shit.
Come on to that shortly.
but from there, it's, you have Burnley at home and you have Forest at home in pretty short
order.
Order. Yeah. In there, sandwiched in there, is Newcastle and Chelsea. But you get that Burnley game, put you in a good spot. God forbid you come away with a draw at Bournemouth. Put yourself in an even better spot. So really. And then you have Brentford after that at home as well, right after. I think that's right after they play Forest at home. So, again, it's all teams around you. Mm-hmm. You have to do it yourself. But when you're not scoring any goals, you're supposed to beat anybody.
It's tough.
So,
it's hard to do that.
Here's my Malort and up the Toffees. Okay. Hey Mel, how'd it taste for you?
A little extra bitter this week.
Yeah, a little extra bitter?
A little extra bitter.
Yeah. No, it's probably just because Mark was talking all that shit to you.
Oh, not just Mark. Apparently everyone.
Rounding out the rest of the league, and oh, so that happened. Bournemouth 2, Sheffield 2, Palace 1, Luton 1, Wolves 2, Fulham 1, Brighton 1, Forest 0, West Ham 2, Burnley 2, Chelsea 3, Newcastle 2. Honestly, for Bournemouth, a bunch of fucking missed chances at first, to be quite honest. You have the very unusual penalty for Solanke where he slips and falls.
That motherfucker. I missed that bet in that game because I had Bournemouth or draw. And I missed the bet by a Dominic Solanke shot on fucking target.
And that's all you needed.
And he had a penalty and still didn't have a shot on target. Yeah,
all he had to do was just get it on target. He could have been saved. Would have been fine. You would have hit it.
So annoyed.
And they had chances.
I just turned it off. Because I started watching this game. And that happened. And I looked at my phone. And I was like, yeah, fuck this.
Yep.
Turned it off.
Done.
I'm out. I can't deal with it.
Well, the rest of that half still saw opportunities for the Cherries. But
not for him.
Sheffield figured out a way to capitalize and find themselves up to nothing. But in the same regards, then for Sheffield figures out a way
to fuck themselves.
Fuck it off.
Yeah, and again, schoolboy errors. I mean, there are things that League One defenders, mistakes that League One defenders shouldn't be making. This is absolutely pitiful. But it was a dreadful first half from Bournemouth in terms of they were very wasteful and they were tepid. I mean, that they just didn't have the intensity that I would expect them to have against the bottom club in the league.
Especially considering this is the run of the five teams at the bottom. This is your run.
And you guarantee your safety.
Right.
You don't
exactly
have to. Because they're outside of the question, but they're close enough to the question it could very quickly become part of the question.
Precisely.
For that final spot, if Luton go on a run or, you know, whatever. But I just... it was just that first half. I couldn't believe they went in 2-0 down.
Mm-hmm. But they figured out.
Sorry, 1-0 down. They scored in the second half.
Sheffield. And then Sheffield scored that second goal, and then they immediately answered, but unfortunately, goal called back. So it's like,
yep.
Bournemouth could easily win this game 4-5-2.
Oh, yeah.
Easily. And then does Sheffield even score when they're suddenly down 2-3-0? Like, it was. Unfortunately for Sheffield, I just don't think they know how to win. They just don't.
It's bad.
Yeah.
It's very bad. And Chris Wilder basically said the same in his press conference. I don't think he'll ever be offered a job in the Premier League again, Chris Wilder. Mm-hmm. Unless he brings a club up.
Right.
So he's just kind of taking this time to say what he wants.
Yeah.
Which is funny. But he is being a little too honest and
certain zero fucks.
Case. Yeah, just doesn't care.
Palace Luton, the exact same thing. Palace had a ton of opportunities, and frankly, Luton was giving it to them on a silver platter in the first half.
Oh, yeah. Now, what I will say real briefly is Chris Wilder is not as bad as some of those Scottish managers that just openly are like, this club fucking sucks, man. He's not doing it that bad.
Right.
But, yeah, now Palace, I mean, honestly, if you want Crystal Palace's time in the Premier League in microcosm, this is the most Palace thing the Palace has ever palaced. Play some decent football. Get a good goal.
Yeah, a really good goal.
That chance was gone.
Yeah.
That chance, there's no reason that a shot on target should have existed.
Yeah.
Score.
Yeah.
Well fucking done. Wow, look at that. Let's be solid at the back. Okay, no problem. We're fucking pumping. The shot they took at one point I thought was going to go out for a throw-in.
And then Mateta also at one point gets the easy opportunity, gets around the keeper, hits the side of the net.
Yeah.
That was the easy one to put away.
Especially on your weaker foot.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't take that chance and then your momentum carries you over and you fall,
mm-hmm.
you are not going to score that goal.
Right.
You have to get around the ball.
Yeah.
Especially on your weaker foot.
Yeah.
And he just didn't extend himself enough.
Nope, not one.
There's
bit.
There's no fucking way.
And then
what's his name hitting the cross, smashing the fucking mm-hmm. crossbar.
Yep.
The other one, Austin Edward.
Mm-hmm.
Eze had a couple of chances as well. One of them very, very tame. Mm-hmm. I thought he should have done better with. But if you let them hang around, you're letting them hang around.
That is the one thing you can say about Luton is they are not going to give up. And if you let them stick around, mm-hmm. they're going to figure out a way. And it took all the way until the very end of the game. The whistle came shortly thereafter. You let them stick around and they figured out a way to get a draw. Now, for Palace, ultimately, the new coach does not really care. It's like, okay, well, boys, we should have fucking saw that one out. But he's still learning his team. He's still learning his players, what he's going to do. He's worried about next season already, especially because they've probably done enough to be safe. And it just so for them, it's not the end of the world, but you can't let this team stick around.
Again, it just doesn't fill you full of confidence. The team that took the most shit from this result, there's two, was you and Forrest.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It was all like, oh, fuck, really? We could have used them to equal our results.
Would
this
have
week.
Loved yeah. for them to have lost.
Would have been great.
Would have been great.
But Woodrow, I think Johnston was probably unsighted.
Yeah.
But what a header.
Yeah. Great head.
I mean, he didn't mean to do it, but it was excellent.
It worked. It back of the
he
fucking net.
Just touched it enough.
Yep.
That it
yep.
creeped inside that far post.
Yep.
But I think the way the defense was, I think Johnston was unsighted and dove late personally, because I think he could have got there, to be honest.
And we'll get into it in injury time. This is a massive, massive week for Luton.
Huge week for Luton.
This is.
And I bet every single fucking game this week, all five.
Oh, there we go. Get in, son. It'll be great to watch you lose that bet.
Probably the first time I'm asking.
So Wolves, Neto goes out, which you're like, oh, fuck off.
Yeah, not again. Yeah.
You know, and you're looking at the game and Fulham is getting chance after chance after
fucking
chance.
Wasteful as fuck.
Getting all the opportunities. And you then go, ain't got nobody could fucking score. Like their three guys who score are
all out
fucking hurt.
Right now. Yeah.
And the next thing you know, Wolves are up fucking 2-0 and in control.
I mean, to be honest, the first goal especially was a bit fortunate.
Yeah, of course.
The first goal was a bit fortunate. I think Bassey did a great job to get his head to that ball. He had to rise big. He did not get enough of a flick, and it obviously fell right to Totti, who, to be fair to him, Totti was very calm and collected, took his touch, and found Ait Nouri with a neat little cutback, who just reacted well and put it in the back of the net. The second one was obviously a deflection from Tom Kearney, which sucks, but shit happens. It just is what it is. But Fulham were just so wasteful. They were. It was like there was plastic wrap over the goal. I mean, they just could not find the fucking back of the net until Iwobi did one of the most unorthodox things I've ever seen in my life in stoppage time.
Yeah.
That's a goal that Darwin Nunez should be scoring. It's like, how did you even think to move your body in that manner?
How did you do that?
No sense. Why would you try to do that?
You know, for Fulham, you dust it off and you go, man, we probably should have had that one. You feel like you probably should have had the one at home against them, too. Yes, Producer Mo, what you got for us?
Greg Sideburns is watching. Well, listening. He goes, working, can't watch. Okay, we were shit versus Wolves, and I don't want to hear or talk about it.
It was wasteful, because it wasn't like you didn't have opportunities. Yeah. You're just wasteful. Again, this is, as we start to hit this time of the season, these are the matches you just don't... Like,
no one cares, because they're both safe.
Even as a supporter, you don't even really... You're like, okay, well, I'm going to watch it. All right, so we lost 2-1. Oh, shit, we won 2-1. Like, unless you're playing somebody big, you're just not going to really care. And you're going to get real nervous when you look and you go, oh, fuck, we're playing Luton, and Luton needs to win. That's really what it is for...
We could actually get embarrassed here. Yeah.
Right, which is what it is for a lot of supporters. Like, and honestly... You know what, Greenside Burns? I would love to be in that fucking scenario right now instead of worrying about what's going to happen.
Just to also pile on to Fulham for a second, because we have a lot of Fulham that listen to this, and I want to make sure we get properly stuck into them this time. They missed a chance in pretty much every possible way. It's like, oh, header, got that. Left foot, got that. Right foot, got that. Deflection, got that. Ass end, got that. Every possible way you could score a goal, except for what I did not have on the bingo card, was outstretched a Iwobi toe to flick it over his own head and past Jose Sa's shoulder. That was not even on my bingo card.
Right.
But the missed chances were they hit the crossbar, they hit the post, they right at the keeper, a dribbled shot. It was fucking horrific.
So for the Seagulls... Hey, it's a win.
That game was ugly as shit.
It's a win.
That you know how seagulls sometimes will always get the videos, TikToks and stuff, and reels of the seagulls like stealing stuff out of shops and
in my way downtown, walking fast. I'm a seagull. Go fuck yourself.
That is a seagull stealing a bag of chips and running down the street.
You know what I'm saying? Like that's what they do. this game looked like they stole into a bar and got themselves tucked into a couple pints.
Yeah.
It was pitiful, this game. So ugly. I hated every second of it, to be honest with you. And Forrest looked... Divock Origi looks devoid of any shred of confidence whatsoever.
And Forrest is kind of doing it to themselves right now.
Big time.
They're where they are because they're doing it to themselves. Because
it was bad.
That was an opportunity. Yeah. Brighton's a wounded animal right now. Like, Everton managed to get a point. Like... Heck, Everton should have had all three. Like, you got to go fucking find a point, man.
Yeah, it was not good from Forrest at all. They were devoid of any real desire, it seemed almost. And Origi, like I said, the chance he put on target was tepid, was timid. And then the second one, how do you sky that from that position?
Yeah.
How do you put that in a rosette?
Yep.
You're a professional fucking footballer. You scored in a Champions League final, I think, didn't he?
Yep.
Or a semifinal, something. Later stages. What are you doing there?
I'm gonna make a show tune reference for you here, Mr. Graham, from Annie Got Her Gun. Would be.
I thought it was Janie's Got a Gun.
Would be Aerosmith's Stud. Would be the Clarets said to Sheffield. Anything you could do, I can do better. And they promptly get a 2-0 lead and fuck it off as well.
Absolutely. 100%.
Oh, my God. I would like to think that actually Brett was there and actually was massaging Danny Ings before he went onto the pitch.
Right.
And that's why Ings got that late winner. Even though Brett is a claret and not iron, he did it because it's the godly thing to do.
The other issue is, though, I think it's washing feet, though, not massaging.
Yeah. Well, maybe he did. Washed his feet before he went onto the pitch.
The issue, though, is even with that godly touch that Brett has, even with that, Danny Ings was touched in one of those scenarios. Danny Ings was touched by an opposing player. So yeah. Now, obviously, he finished the game, so it's a delayed injury, but I'm sure he's going to be out for at least 6 weeks.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Because an opponent got close to him.
For West Ham, you know what? It wasn't your best day at the office, and yet you still found a way to get a point.
Well,
you know,
Fofana, a wonder strike. There's nothing you could do about that goal.
Yeah, nothing.
It knuckled. It swerved. It was brilliant.
Which changes
what a strike.
How West Ham is going to play right away.
100%. Absolutely. And then you really can't. I mean, the Greek army themselves could not account for Achilles' heel, so the West Ham defense is not going to be able to account for Achilles' toe, much like a cat can't account for a Zuma's toe, a Frenchman's toe. It's just not going to happen, right?
Oh, poor kitty. Got him, coach.
And I wrote a really good joke about the guy that scored the own goal for Forrest, because his name is Omo Bamidele.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, that's probably just how they spell Obama now.
need to go back
stupid
to that joke.
I know, because it was good. And I'm mad you moved on too fast.
Chelsea get uncharacteristic goal scorers this match.
Yes.
I mean, it was kind of interesting. Like, Nick Jackson, a little fucking cheeky flick.
And then everything else he did was dog shit for the most part. I cannot stand him.
Mudrick had the ball at his feet and somehow didn't trip over his own 2 feet and actually completed the goal.
That goal, it looked like he was playing on fast forward and everybody else was still in regular speed. That was brilliant, that goal. I couldn't believe it. And that's a player that could do with a goal, needs some confidence.
Right.
Now, apparently he's, you know, a little bit homesick, you know, for Ukraine and everything. Obviously, there's still things going on there. A lot of Ukrainian players are strewn across the world, just kind
of course
worried about home. And you know, obviously our thoughts are with their families in that country. But they have they're human, man. Players are human. That can affect performances. It can affect his ability to settle and all that kind of stuff, which is absolutely fucking fair.
Yeah.
And he hasn't found it very easy, but I do find his record of having 6 goals now for Chelsea, 5 of them have been at Stamford Bridge.
Okay.
So being home, obviously, is very important to him, is what I'm trying to say. And but obviously, taking the ball from Conor Gallagher isn't important to him. He'll fuck a teammate over in a heartbeat.
Right.
Didn't give a shit. But I love the shitty look on Fabian Cher's face after he got nutmegged. And he squeezed that size 5 football through the size of a butthole.
Yeah.
Between Fabian Cher's legs.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed every second of it because Fabian Cher looks like a pretentious twat and I don't like him.
Just determined that. Right?
Yeah. He has a punchable face and I don't like him.
For Newcastle.
I wouldn't punch him because he's very strong.
For Newcastle, the loss of Gordon could be potentially massive.
That'd be huge. It'd be absolutely huge.
At first you think it's a muscle, and then when you see the trainer goes in to bend his knee, Gordon immediately smacks at him like...
Yeah, well, he did the lay down like this with his hands over his face, and then when the trainer went to bend his knee, I thought he was going to punch him.
Yeah.
He jumped up and was like, ah, fuck! Like,
yeah, that's...
Don't... It's not great.
That's not a good sign.
Not at all.
That's a you could be done for the year kind of
that could be
thing.
Done till Christmas kind of thing.
Yeah, that could be a bad, bad knee injury.
So hopefully not the case.
Yeah.
For Anthony Gordon, because obviously he had hopes on the England squad in the summer.
And he has played well enough to deserve it.
The good part, though, sorry, Mel, the good thing is that he played 15 minutes after the initial thing that brought him discomfort.
Mm-hmm.
So the hope would be is that it's just a bit of a strain, you know, a couple weeks and he's back.
Right.
No problem. But we'll see what happens. The coming days are going to be important for him.
It is certainly
obviously
unnerving. Now, Mel, what you got for us?
Well, there's a lot of action going on in the chatters. First, Shore Billy, Graham is just jealous that Fabian has better hair.
False.
Continue. Brought up. And Smokey has an issue that you guys didn't even bring up, the handball in the West Ham match.
What handball?
Well, I guess that's the answer to that question.
There wasn't one. Ref didn't see it, didn't happen.
I got nothing more to say then. Thanks, guys.
Honestly, it probably was a handball, to be honest with you.
Fair. It's very fair.
To be fair, West Ham got fucked.
I was just saying.
I also thought David Moyes would have a fucking heart attack on the sidelines. He was kicking every goddamn ball. He's 70 years old. Can't be doing that. He's not 70 either. Just looks it.
It's also Osa, so we can't have it all just go on for days. We gotta kind of get. If you read my notes, there's three sentences for each team in the first segment. Then there's two for each team in the third segment.
I don't think Smokey has your notes.
Then there's one for Osa. That happened because Graham, it's called Osa. That happened.
Sure money.
Smokey, since you're watching, if you want to see the vein on Sam's forehead, type a diatribe into the comments of this video, and I will read it as closing remarks, because I don't have any currently. So start the essay, my friend.
It's your fucking, it's St. Podrick fucking rant that you do every year. We already know what's fucking coming, stud.
Oh, Porg.
Uh-huh.
Oh, sweet. My wife just texted me. She wants to go back to Paris.
Oh, that's
I'm
nice.
Good for that.
Taylor Swift is there in May.
I'm totally there for that. That's not why. She's not a huge fan. I am trying to find the Gmail.
There okay, go. Very
All
good.
Right. I lost again.
Yeah, no shit.
It just isn't going really well. So, yeah, I'm down 14-47. Sam, what do you got? I just need to cuddle and cry.
The streak is over, and I am back in the red. I am only down $18.
Big Sam's Lock of the Week.
Did you know that 27.586207% of the time, it works 100% of the time? That's the closest it's ever been to the shirt, by the way.
I mean, that is pretty close. We might have to put that shirt on sale.
It is right there next to that. For my couple losers, I went, meh, it was a good run, you know, four in a row.
We're fine. Everything's fine.
That handball would have went my way. West Ham would have won, and I would have hit my bed.
What handball?
Well, that didn't exactly. happen.
Yeah, exactly.
That might be
even on replay, it didn't happen, which they have replays to watch that happening. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just not going well, is it? That was my cup of losers. A couple things that should have, West Ham being one of them, should have happened, didn't. For me,
and
but
now.
First from Pat. Thank you very much.
And you know, that's one I will leave in the show.
And now, it's time for our degenerate gambling friend, Pat's Pick of the Week.
Not a lot of matches to lose from. Except he wrote loose. Which is funny. So he says, and quote, okay, I lost last week because of a draw in the Luton Palace match, so I'm back down to 14-20 in the red. And this week, because there isn't a lot of matches on the board, I'm just going to place one bet on one match. I'll take a bit of an upset. Fulham to beat Tottenham. Going to be down 15-20 for $100, which scores me 220. You guys have a great couple weeks, and hopefully I can call in the next time, because I'll be on vacation March 25th for spring break, but I still sleep like an old man and get tired by 9 and go to bed early, so we'll see.
All right. Well, I hope so. I hope he's with us.
He'll be on vacation. He'll be drinking from noon on.
Oh, yeah.
He'll be awake making bad decisions.
Oh, yeah, he will.
Because it's also the fucking tournament, isn't it?
It's also why he's our degenerate gambling friend.
Correct.
Pat.
Yeah, there's no fucking way he's going to sleep. Fucking nutso.
All right, so what you got, stud?
So I decided to give myself the absolute best opportunity, because the only game I think is going to win is Tottenham beating Fulham.
Right.
That's the only thing I'm fully certain on, right? So other than that, I parlayed a bunch of double chances.
Nine-way parlay!
It's only five games, sir, mm-hmm. But I did place a total of 9 bets.
Nine-way parlay!
Because I did double chances, so technically I'm betting...
Nine-way parlay!
Okay, that's enough. Okay. Thank you.
He's going to play it 6 more times.
Bunch of double chances in Tottenham to beat Fulham. The others, the double chances are Bournemouth or a draw with Luton, Luton or a draw with Forest, Brentford or a draw with Burnley, and Villa or a draw with West Ham. And then obviously Tottenham to beat Fulham. That gave me plus 537.
Mm-hmm. You dick should listen more to Mel, so...
So I can basically, a little over, but take my deficit down by a third.
Not good gambling.
No.
Not good gambling at all, Mr. Graham.
Actually, it's incredibly smart.
Your current track record would say no, not at all. Not one bit. But you know what does have great betting mindset? The fucking chicken.
Well, Kitty missed as United won outright over Everton, and she sits at 15-12. So this week, I gave Kitty Tottenham heading to Fulham. Now, Kitty showed me a picture of her and Daniel Radcliffe and Rupert Grint. Now, they were enjoying some sheer... Now, you have Sir Lincoln. I'm assuming you mean... Sri Lankan. Cuisine.
Spelled S-I-R, like sir. That's how Sri Lanka is spelled.
There's something not spelled correctly on here. Mm-hmm. I will swear by it.
In except where I went law. To Google and, ooh, and did it on
Google. Lies.
Exactly.
All right, Alex. Now, they're in the Soho district of London. Interestingly enough, Daniel is a cottager and Rupert is a spur. So it looks like Kitty is going back to the well with another draw this weekend.
You know what else is in Soho?
What's that?
Gay frogs.
Well, it's the water that's making the freaking frogs gay, that's for sure. Blocked it and I wasn't even looking. I just got wide.
The fact that I wasn't even looking and I hit you is the real story. Besides, if you were gambling that I would have hit miss on Graham, I'm going to edit that. If you were gambling...
No, you can't edit it now. It makes her reference how much she fucked up. Right, yeah,
exactly.
She fucked up really bad.
If you were betting that I would have missed Houston, then maybe we have a problem. So always remember to gamble legally and responsibly.
Don't gamble on the fact that it's called Sri Lanka, and I spelled it correctly. Anyways, Mr. Graham, any parting words?
You didn't type it fast enough, if there was some. So no, I don't have any parting words.
Yeah, you do. The one you always do. Patty, not Patties.
You're right. I should do that, shouldn't I? Patty is the nickname for a woman named Patricia. Paddy is the nickname for Patrick, the anglicized version of Porg. Padrag, as it's spelled phonetically, the Gaelic name for Patrick.
Like Queef and Keller.
Like Queef and Keller, right, going right down the street there.
You know, closing the tour company on St. Patrick's Day. Because the only underage person in our company's last name, Patty, and her mom goes, we don't work on our holiday.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
Quality. So yeah, it's Patty, not Patty. Make sure you're using your double D's for good, this ladies.
Always, ladies. Always use them for good, not evil.
This lovely week of the year. One of my most favorite weeks of the year.
Excellent. Well, thank you so very much for joining us, everybody. Next up on the live stream will be the EFL show, where we're going to recap what went on in the rest of professional football. And then, of course, after that will be injury time, where we recap our fantasy. We also talk about what's going to be happening for the next weekend's action. But we're also going to talk about the FA Cup this time as well, because we have the quarterfinals this weekend. Should somebody want to find injury time, Sam, how do they go about doing it?
It's very easy. It's patreon.com/dfootballshow. Just sign up to that $1 tier. You get all the extra content Sam's talking about and a lot more funny shit.
Very good.
Because we're usually a bit loosened up by then because of the drinking.
Very true. All right, everybody. Till next week.
Have yourself a Tully. And enjoy Patties. Cheers.
Born in the land of Bowie, Maryland. Bred to be a fan of fucking Everton. Punch you in the eye and drink your rye. Sam Houston. Arsenal fans have another Sam. Right, AA, the fucking Gooner Graham. Smells of a lord. Looks great in shorts. Sam Graham. Fucking United! Fucking United!
hit the fucking mute button.